the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, we certainly live in a global world. Globalization has affected manufacturing, but it's also affecting how we live. Some people are living overseas. We're talking about dual citizenships. Let's find out the benefits of doing that. Joining us on the program is Christopher Willis. He's with Latitude. And Chris, we had you on a while back, and we're seeing more and more Americans now are opting for dual citizenship, or let's say they're living overseas. I have a client that's living in Costa Rica. It's cheaper. So let's talk about the benefits of dual citizenship and why a person would want to consider it.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. We've had an enormous surge of interest from Americans who are looking, you know, not just at an alternative citizenship, but also residency as well. And people are starting to realize that it's becoming a necessary part of their overall planning, you know, both for family and financial. And, you know, one of the things that the pandemic has shown is that many people weren't prepared, you know, for such an eventuality. And so, you know, when the travel restrictions came in, for example, Americans really felt that their wings were well and truly clipped. You couldn't travel, you know, and so, you know, when you couldn't have access to Canada, to Europe, to Asia, it really gave a big wake up call. And, you know, Americans don't like being told that they can't do something, right? So when they realized they can't do it, they had to find a different alternative. And to give you some context, I mean, the small Caribbean island of St. Kitts and Nevis, which has a population of 50,000 people, you know, one of the smallest countries in the Western Hemisphere, actually had greater mobility during COVID than an American passport holder, you know, while all these restrictions were in place. So when the restrictions were in place, an American could go to less than 80 countries around the world visa-free. And, you know, compared to St. Kitts and Nevis, which would give you access to over 150. So just by having that second citizenship in somewhere like St. Kitts and Nevis, you didn't have those same restrictions imposed upon you. And so that was a big wake-up call for a lot of people. And then, you know, we've seen different things, you know, from the election to, you know, what's happening with the current administration. People are looking at legacy planning, and really it's that peace of mind, because the what if scenario has happened, right? People were living through this terrible pandemic. And now it's, you know, how do I make sure that should something like this happen again, am I covered? Is my family going to be safe? And am I going to have peace of mind of somewhere that I can go? And, you know, we're also seeing people who are looking to potentially renounce, you know, which, you know, from a tax perspective has major implications. And so if someone is looking to renounce, they have to have a second citizenship, you know, otherwise they'll render themselves stateless, which obviously can't happen. So there's a lot of different components, Jim, in terms of why people are looking at this. And, you know, 2-3 years ago, the U.S. was not a major source market for these types of programs, but it's really spiked in the last couple of years. And, you know, no matter who you speak to in the industry, all they're saying is it's the U.S. That's the hot source market. These are people who are looking to apply for these types of programs.
And when you're applying for a second or dual citizenship, what are the requirements and where are the best countries to go? I know, for example, I have a lot of Canadian friends, and my Canadian friends say that if you can prove you have $1 million, you can get citizenship or at least a temporary visa to stay in Canada. What are the requirements of most companies to get that second dual citizenship?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, it varies from country to country. And, you know, if we look at the old adage, you get what you pay for, you know, definitely applies here, because you've got options in Europe, you've got options in the Caribbean, for example. And when you look at the strength of the passport for which you're applying, if you want the stronger one, such as Europe, it's going to cost you more. You know, the Caribbean is familiar to many people, and so and geographically very close to the United States. So there's a comfort level there, and you know, the investment starts at 100,000 US. So, you know, it's very affordable for your high net worth and your ultra high net worth clients who are looking to participate in this. And then many of them have either a straight donation or a contribution investment into the state, or they you can invest into approved real estate, or in some cases, it's a hybrid. So, you know, when we look at each one of these programs, we first have to look at, you know, speak to the client and get a sense of what their motivations are, you know, what their risk appetite is, what timelines, you know, are they looking at for this? So there's a lot of interesting options out there. Right now in Europe, we're seeing a lot of interest in Portugal. And Portugal is interesting because it's has a very low day count requirement. So initially you get a residence card and you have to spend an average of 7 days a year for 5 years in order to be eligible for citizenship. So this is a longer term play, but with minimal outlay, you're starting at around 280,000 euro would be your minimum investment if you were going into a real estate offering. But if, for people who are looking longer term, they're saying, look, I don't need citizenship now. I'm happy to spend my week a year in Portugal. And in 5-6 years, I will have a European citizenship at the end of it. And of course, with European citizenship, you have all the settlement rights in the other member states. So that's quite a powerful proposition for many people, especially when they're maybe looking at options for their kids further down the road.
You know, I was told my parents were born in Europe so that it would be easier for me to get like a Euro passport, given that my dad was born in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, that's a different type of application, which is what we call citizenship by descent. So in most countries have a version of that. Some of it, it'll go back one generation, others will be two. As a matter of fact, we've seen, you know, Ireland has had such a surge after Brexit happened because you had many British people who had ancestral links to Ireland. And once Brexit kicked in, they wanted to get a European passport. And so Ireland was just inundated, you know, to the point even with COVID, they had to stop processing because people couldn't do those applications from home. So there's a huge backlog of citizenship by descent applications in Ireland. But you have the same too in many, you know, people in Brazil, they have links to Italy and to Portugal, where there's some descent options there. So it's one of the things we would explore with a client to see if they have another claim to citizenship. And you're absolutely right. If someone does have a parent or a grandparent, they could very well be eligible.
As you take a look at the countries, what are the most popular countries that people are gravitating towards getting a passport or residency? And the second question, why these countries?
I'll go back one step and say we have to distinguish between residency and citizenship. So residency, you know, being you're allowed to stay indefinitely in that country with the rights to live, work and study or retire. And then this will usually have some sort of day count requirement to maintain your residency. And then you would have to renew it at regular intervals, say every 5 years, for example. But with citizenship, obviously, you're now naturalized as a citizen of that country. You're afforded the protection of that country and you have the right to a passport of that country. So you can come and go as often or as little as you want, but you still maintain that status. And this was extremely popular in the Caribbean. So you've got five countries, St. Kitts and Nevis, Antigua and Barbuda, St. Lucia, Dominica, and Grenada, which all offer a citizenship by investment program. So this means that by making your investment, be it a donation or purchasing real estate, you can receive citizenship in as little as 3 months. So it's very, very attractive from that point of view. Now, keep in mind, the American client is very different to, say, somebody from a country that has very little in terms of visa-free privileges. So if you came from Lebanon, from Pakistan, from South Africa, countries like that where you need a visa pretty well for any type of travel you want to do, you know, this is a game changer for them. You know, we take it for granted that it's easy to travel because you're on an American passport. You know, you can pretty well get anywhere in the world. You're not always having to get visas and such. But for these people, mobility is a key element for them. For the American, it's not as much, but it still comes into play. And so out of those Caribbean countries, those five that I listed, you know, they're all very similar, but they've all got their unique differences. For example, Grenada, for your non-American client, is a treaty country with the United States as it relates to the E2 visa. So one of the criteria to qualify for an E2 visa to the United States is you have to be a citizen of a treaty country. So if you were from South Africa or from Brazil and you wanted to go down the E2 route, you couldn't do it unless you, say, first made yourself a citizen of Grenada and use that citizenship to make the application. So there's some unique characteristics of each. But then you've also got, you know, the two British overseas territories of the Cayman Islands and Anguilla, which you touched on your Canadian friends. These have become extremely popular with Canadians because the tax component considerations are very different. As you know, Americans, you're taxed on your citizenship, but if you're Canadian or British or pretty well any other nationality, you're taxed on your residence. So, you know, Canada recently had an election and, you know, things are essentially the same, but there's indications that there's going to be an increase in the wealth tax. So many Canadians who are already taxed quite heavily are looking at jurisdictions such as Cayman and Anguilla to actually move to, spend more than 183 days a year and make themselves tax residents in those jurisdictions. So it goes back to my earlier point. We have to understand the motivation of the client and why they're looking to do one of these programs and what their main driver is. So that's those two programs have really been getting a lot of interest as well. But then you've got some changes. For example, I mentioned earlier that some countries will make changes in the new year. And one of those is Montenegro in the Balkans, in Eastern Europe. Now, this is an interesting opportunity for many people because they're not currently a member of the European Union and they're scheduled to ascend in 2025. So someone could look at this as, again, a long-term bet, saying, okay, let's apply there while the cost to invest is relatively low, knowing that in, say, 5 years' time, I will have citizenship of a European Union member state. So that's attractive, again, for some people who maybe don't want to go the Portugal route of doing the day count and such like, because it's a direct pathway to citizenship. So the, you know, and then you've got other options in Portugal that I spoke about earlier. They're putting in some changes for residential real estate. As of January, you know, places like the Algarve, Lisbon, and Porto won't be admissible regions for that program. So the, but if that's the case, you can look at some commercial real estate, which is not affected by that. So there's a lot of different changes that we're very on top of and we have to guide the clients with so they understand what the best solution is and identifying any potential problems that could come up.
Are you seeing a lot of Americans considering this now, given, you know, some of the things that we've seen in this country, whether it's constitutional rights, mandates, you know, the governments have been doing some things that are almost in many ways totalitarian in the way they approach something? Are you seeing more Americans respond to that by saying, you know what, I need to find a safe place to live?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where, you know, the Caribbean is attractive to many because it's geographically very close. And if, you know, unfortunately, in the U.S., it's a very divisive country when it comes to politics. And there's going to be, you know, half the country is happy, the other half isn't happy. And even if the happy half isn't completely happy, if we look at what's happening now, the way things are being run and people are getting disillusioned. So whether it's political, whether it's social, whether it's economic, there's always push factors why people are looking at this, because it's always better to have more options in life. The more you have, the more choice you have, the better decisions you can make. And as I mentioned before, the legacy component, you know, it's not mainly just for me, but what am I setting up for my kids in the future and for my grandkids? So this is coming, you know, we speak to a lot of family offices and wealth managers, and this is the these are the types of conversations that they're having with their clients, because they're finding that, you know, it's becoming such a key component, one that was maybe not considered before, but is now becoming that essential tool in the toolbox. And that's a lot of the conversations that we're having. Because it's almost, you know, it's no longer, you know, what car do you drive or what watch is on your wrist. It's what passport is in your pocket, right? And so that's becoming a little bit more of the conversations. And a lot of it too, Jim, is, you know, it's the smart money that's doing this right now. So it's the people who are industry leaders. We're looking, you know, we speak with celebrities, we speak with high profile people that have influence, and they're looking at this now, and they're not looking at, you know, that these are people who look 20 years ahead. You know, they're not looking at what's the next 18 months looking like. These are people who look long term, and they're identifying this as a key part of their strategy and their planning.
And these people that you're talking to of influence that are thinking longer term, are there particular areas they're gravitating towards?
Yeah, most of them are Europe. You know, there's because they see the value of a European passport. And when I spoke before about, you know, you get what you pay for, places like Malta, which is extremely popular, you know, you can receive your citizenship in Malta in around about 14 to 15 months, cost you in the region of about €1 million, give or take, depending on the family size and different considerations. But if you look at the Caribbean, which will take you 3 or 4 months and cost you a few hundred thousand, you know, you're not paying as much, but the strength of the passport is not as strong as what you would have in Europe. But then you've got other programs. Portugal, we spoke about, it's a five-year journey. Montenegro, you could get it quicker, but it's not a full EU member state. So there's all these different considerations. And then a client can decide, okay, the most important thing for me is time, or it's strength of the passport, or it's price. There's all these different things to look at. And then we can whittle it down and say, okay, this is the best solution for you based on your wish list.
What about Switzerland?
Well, Switzerland's interesting because they don't have and it's a little bit like Austria, they don't have a defined program. You know, the different cantons in Switzerland will have different requirements, and you essentially have to negotiate at different levels of government, starting with a canton and then moving up to the federal level to be approved. And, you know, you essentially have to negotiate what your tax, your annual tax contribution will be. So it's a very bespoke application for Switzerland, and it does require a fair bit of involvement and representation on the ground. And that's not going to be for the mainstream. You know, that would be for sort of a very unique client, you know, who has those who has the right profile and is willing to go through that process. So a lot of the programs that we talk about are predictable and accessible, and so many people prefer having that certainty around it, if you like.
And let's talk about the tax implications, because the U.S. is one of the few countries around the world that tax global income. So if, let's say, you know, I don't like living here anymore, if I want to go to someplace else where it's less restrictive, if I give up my citizenship, don't I have tax implications with the government in terms of capital gains?
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, I'm not a tax guy, Jim. I'm an immigration guy. But when it comes to announcing, yes, there's an exit tax that would have to be calculated. And for some people, that's going to be significant. So, you know, it's weighing it up. Is it worth it? As opposed to just accepting the fact I have to file irrespective of where I'm living in the world. Because it used to be that, let's say you had an American who'd lived offshore for the last 20 years, you know, they don't have any real ties or connections to the United States. So for them to announce it wasn't as big of a deal. But we're having people talk to us now who are saying, look, I'm still US-based, but I'm really getting fed up with things. So I want to announce. But it's a big process. And there's also an emotional factor to it as well. I mean, Americans are extremely patriotic and proud of their country. And so to actually sever that tie does have a huge emotional component to it, which I don't think everybody, you know, people can really appreciate until you start going down that route. But we're seeing, and the numbers are low. I mean, my understanding is between 8,000 and 10,000 people a year do this. So it's very low when you look at a percentage of the general population. But it's getting more of a trend. You know, you're seeing a lot of these sovereign bodies that are saying, you know, time to leave the US and set up somewhere else. But to my earlier point, if you want to do it, you've got to have a second citizenship, because you can't renounce unless you have access to another jurisdiction.
You know, I looked into offshore trusts for myself and for clients in the OO decade, and the tax attorneys I talked to, the tax accountant said, you know, you do an offshore trust, it's almost like guaranteeing you're going to get audited every year by the IRS.
Yeah, I mean, it's, as I said, although I'm not a tax person, the it's having a structure in place where you're maybe minimizing your tax burden in the United States. So you still have to file. But if you're spending, let's say, over 183 days, you've got a big enough footprint in this other jurisdiction, there may be some ways to minimize your tax burden because you're generating offshore. But again, that's not my specialty. So I'll probably divert back to you and to your colleagues who can advise your clients on that.
So given what you've seen over the last 2 years, and certainly I think citizens anywhere around the world have never seen what we've seen in the last 2 years with shutdowns, vaccinations, the pandemic itself, has that generated more interest in going overseas?
Oh, 100%. Like I was saying, it's having more options, which is the key thing, right? And that's what people are realizing, that, you know, they weren't prepared. You know, none of us were prepared for the pandemic to be as significant as it was. But what it made people realize is they need to have a plan B, you know, and that's the that was a big takeaway for many people. And when they realize now that there are opportunities to do this, they're studying this more and more. And so whether it's through descent, as the example you gave earlier, or if they have no other claims to citizenship, they can use one of these investment programs to qualify. And then it comes down to what's the, you know, what's the strength of the passport? What timeline do you need? How much do you want to invest? All those considerations then come into play to determine what's going to be the best jurisdiction for you. And we actually have people who make multiple applications. You know, they may say, look, I want a quick fix, so I'm going to get something in the Caribbean. But I also like Portugal and the long-term hedge to get my my European citizenship. So I'm going to do that as well. So we're seeing more and more of that as well, where people are starting to do multiple applications to cover as many bases as possible.
In the European countries, are you saying basically Portugal looks the best?
It's been one of the most popular, and each one has their own merits. I mean, Malta is extremely popular as well, but it's a little bit more restricted in terms of the numbers. So they'll have set quotas per year that they will accept. Because it's a direct application to citizenship, their process is you have to first become a resident and be a resident for 12 months before you're eligible to apply for citizenship. This is why it takes about 14 to 16 months to come through. But then you're given citizenship, fully EU citizenship to an EU member state and all the privileges that go with it. So you could then technically go and live and work in Spain, in France, in Germany. And again, you've got all the settlement rights and privileges of a European member state citizen. But if, again, if someone says, look, I'd rather, I've got a connection to Portugal. We see a lot of Brazilians, for example, because of the common language, you know, we're looking at Portugal as being a logical next step. But then you've also got, you know, a lot of Americans love their golf and they're quite happy with the gated communities and the golf courses and the lifestyle that Portugal offers. So that's one of the reasons why it's been extremely popular. We do see interest in places like the United Kingdom and Ireland, where, you know, people are looking at just, again, having that residency. There's a lot of sort of connections already between the United States and Ireland. So people like to sort of revisit their heritage and their ancestry and perhaps they prefer to make an investment in Ireland and have residency there than, let's say, someone in Portugal. However, the pathway to get citizenship in Ireland is much more convoluted than doing Portugal, which is why many people tend to gravitate towards the Portuguese program.
I know that if you are a U.S. citizen and let's say, I don't know, you're working for an oil company and they station you overseas, depending on what country, the U.S. government gives you an offset on taxes. I think it's close to $100,000. Does it make any difference in terms of what country you go to? In other words, let's say you establish residency in Portugal or some other state. Do they tax your income as well as the U.S.?
It depends on how many days you spend there. So in most cases, it's if you're doing more than 183 days, they will classify you as a tax resident, which is the rule that's usually applied everywhere else apart from the United States. So, you know, let's say the example of the United Kingdom, if you spend or Canada, for example, you spend 183 days, you trigger yourself as a tax resident, and then you're taxed on your income generated within that jurisdiction. So whereas the US may tax you on your global, you would only be taxed typically on the income that you generate from that other jurisdiction. Now, of course, each one is different. You know, Portugal has the attractive non-habitual tax regime, which is a 10-year exemption, which is attractive for many people. And again, this is where we would have to include conversations with tax specialists to make sure that, you know, the clients best represented and understand what the tax implications could be. Because we also have, Jim, many clients who have multiple residences. So you may have someone who's an American, but also has a place in London, has a place in Dubai, has a place in Hong Kong, and a place in Buenos Aires, right? So they can manage their day count and sort of shuttle around between those different ones, always being conscious not to trigger themselves as a tax resident in one of those jurisdictions. So it goes back to the earlier comment is we've got to really make these bespoke based on each client's motivations and their circumstances.
Yeah, because the worst thing you'd want to do, and especially with taxes going up here, is find yourself paying double taxes. Let me ask you this. Let's say that I want to get a passport. I want to establish residency. Let's just pick Portugal. Do I have to get the passport and all the paperwork and legal stuff before I go there, or can I go there and work on the process?
Well, but Portugal's, because it's a residence for 5 years before you're eligible, it's not a direct pathway to citizenship. So you got to meet the residence requirements before. But if we looked at, say, Malta or the Caribbean, where you receive your citizenship very quickly, you don't have to make a physical visit. In some cases, like in Portugal, you have to go over at least once to do the biometrics. Okay, so that's one of their requirements. And again, each program will be slightly different. But the one of the reasons why the Caribbean is very popular is that you don't have to make an initial visit. You can get everything done and sorted remotely. And then you can have the privileges of that citizenship from the get-go. And again, because it is processed quite quickly. Because one of the things that we're also seeing is that if people are looking to invest, you know, in property, we're saying to them, look, instead of buying, you know, a condo in Miami Beach, why don't you buy something in the Caribbean, but you get the double benefit of also getting economic citizenship. So there, for those people who are looking at a real estate play, and that could be the same in Portugal, you know, where it's been extremely popular because of the quality of real estate. And, you know, I spoke about the golf lovers, but you've also got just the lifestyle that goes with living in Portugal, that they can say, okay, I do want to divest my investments and I want to buy some property outside, but I might as well do it where I can get the double benefit of a second residency or citizenship.
Yeah, this is, I don't know if this relates to foreign residency, but yeah, I do know that, for example, if you go establish residency in Puerto Rico, you don't pay federal income taxes.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, Puerto Rico is not a jurisdiction we deal with, so I can't comment from experience, but I have heard things of that nature. And that's obviously why, you know, yourself and your listeners, you know, exist, because you have that knowledge of how to maximize benefits in some jurisdictions.
And finally, I guess, are there any other considerations we haven't discussed that we would have to consider before you let's say, apply for dual citizenship or residency?
No, I think we've covered the main things. Like I said, is figuring out, you know, why do you want to do it? You know, do you have a preference? What's your budget? What's your timeline? And, you know, what do you want the end product to be? For example, are you satisfied with what the Caribbean can offer you? Or do you want to have the top end, which is European? So it's the great thing with this job is that our clients are all have weird and wonderful backgrounds and motivations and needs. And so you can really go through that journey with them to find a bespoke solution that's going to be, you know, that's going to meet their expectations, because everyone's different. And, you know, we're seeing that more and more. So, you know, the needs of a, you know, from a single family office and representing a significant family versus a musician versus, you know, a hedge fund manager in New York City, they're all going to have different motivations of why they want to do this. And that's what makes my job fascinating.
If our listeners would like to find out more information about the services you provide on, let's say, getting passports and citizenship, how can they do so?
Well, the easiest way, I mean, we have our website, which is latitudeworld.com. And my details are on there under the team section, but my email is christopher.willis@latitudeworld.com. But also we're proud to be the first global firm to set up a physical office in the United States with a permanent office in Los Angeles and satellite offices in Palm Beach and New York. So, you know, there's opportunities to visit in person as well. We're finding that more and more people, now that the world's opening up a little bit, being able to get back and have that personal connection again is vital.
All right. Well, listen, I want to thank you for joining us on the program with some very insightful information.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.